This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This is Rich, Chris Morocco, telling people not to talk too much because we're trying to keep the production moving. Do you know how many hours of footage it takes to shoot one reverse engineering? And if you tell them, like, hey, Chris, like, maybe we could move this along a little bit, like, that's not even worth it because then you'll get 5 minutes on how you're rushing him.
Hey there, listeners, future callers, and cooking enthusiasts. This is Dinner SOS, the show where we help you save dinner or whatever you're cooking. I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious. The May issue of Bon Appetit highlights drinks in a bunch of different ways. There's our story, A la Vodka, featuring recipes that incorporate vodka in unexpected ways. There's a feature all about Korean drinking culture and the food called anju that goes along with it. And there's our gorgeously shot cover story, Brighten Up Your Bar, featuring 15 cocktail recipes that need only 5 bottles of booze to put together. So today, we're actually not going to talk about cooking at all. Instead, we're talking about drinks, with and without alcohol. To kick things off, I'm joined in the studio by the one and only senior test kitchen editor, Shilpa Oskokovich, who worked on our 5-bottle bar story. Okay, Shilpa, we had this question from a listener named Alana, which was as follows. I love having a cocktail at home and would love to be able to make a variety of different cocktails, but I don't want to have a fully stocked bar. What are the best go-to liquors, alcohols, bitters, etc. to keep on hand and still have a good amount of variety and options when it comes to making cocktails? Or, otherwise stated, if you're starting from nothing and you want to bring some interesting drinks into your life, what's the magic number?
5 as the answer.
5. 5 was the number. Yeah. So we had to make some hard choices, right?
Yes.
But here are the 5 bottles that we determined you need this summer.
Yes. The list that we ended up with was gin, mezcal, Campari, vermouth, and sherry.
Yeah.
Which allowed us to do like upwards of 10 cocktails with just those 5 bottles.
Yeah, and there would even be more too, right? We're actually giving you like overt recipes for these 10 or more drinks.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other potential uses as well, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
Mezcal, you can obviously use anywhere you would use tequila and sort of so on and so forth. So I want to get into that in a sec. But here's my question. Is it different to develop a drink recipe than like a food recipe?
I would say so, yeah.
Is it?
Of course, I think so. I mean, first of all, in terms of time, it's way faster. Like, you know, you can just make a drink and dump it out and taste it. And I also think, especially with this particular story, we were very conscious of the number of ingredients going into each cocktail. So really having a very tight edit on your ingredient list, I guess it wasn't that different from, in that aspect, it wasn't that different from developing food because even then you have restrictions. So in that aspect, I guess that's a similarity. And the difference was maybe the time.
You know, that's a really important thing to signal here with drinks recipes, which is that there's still, even if you only have 5 types of alcohol, you can still create quite a bit of complexity for yourself if you're creating your own infusions, mm-hmm. if you're steeping, if you're macerating, if you're creating like very like culinary-based cocktails. But what I loved about these drinks was we made really strategic, occasionally tough choices, mm-hmm. but honestly, I thought these were some of the most compelling drink recipes we've ever done, and they're not hard. Like,
No. Nothing
is particularly time-consuming or requires other specialty ingredients, but they're not dumb either. And I think top line for me is, I think part of the issue with cocktails can be that when you try to stray from what you know to be tried and true for yourself, there's a lot of fine print. There can be a lot of special ingredients. There can be a lot of steps and interventions required. These recipes, so accessible. They are really some of the easiest drinks, you know, we've ever kind of come up with. And they are a great way to break out of your comfort zone and be rewarded for it.
Yeah, I think making cocktails can come across as very intimidating because there's a lot of fanfare attached to it and drama, like when you go to a bar, especially a really fancy good one. So I think there's a level of unknown as opposed to cooking. I feel like more of us are ready to try something with food than it is with making drinks. So I agree with everything that you said about this package. I think it started from the very, like, 5 bottles. That was great. And then each one being really considered, having a very small list of ingredients.
So in the feature, I'm going to go down this list. Campari Spritz, Americano, Spa Water Punch, Ginger Snap, Garden Wedding, Hot Pink Punch, Mezcal Sour, Frozen Garibaldi, Sherry Colada, Boozy Banana Latte, French 75, Before Daylight, Mezcal Paloma, Frozen Negroni, and Adonis Spritz. First, I want to talk about the Garden Wedding, which is a peach yogurt fizz. Shilpa, break it down for us.
The peach yogurt fizz was very fascinating because it was built on a base of gin, and then there was honey, and you muddle in like a basil leaf at the bottom of the cocktail jar. And the most interesting ingredient for me was a little bit of yogurt goes in. And yeah, it's just enough to give the drink a little bit of body and a little bit of fermented complexity, but it wasn't enough to make it a smoothie.
Yeah, there is yogurt in the drink.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fizzy.
That was a particularly good
so
one.
So fun.
Yeah.
Was that one developed by Maggie Hoffman?
That was developed by, I think we should speak about Maggie.
Oh, yeah,
here.
No, I yeah. wanted.
Maggie is the former director of Epicurious, and she has written 2 books, Batch Cocktails, which speaks all about making pitcher drinks, and The One Bottle Cocktail. More than 80 recipes with fresh ingredients and a single spirit.
I promise what I'm about to say is not a brag about me, but it's actually a statement about Maggie. But I can look at a lot of recipes, not every single one, and kind of cook the recipe in my mind and sort of have a pretty decent idea of like what it's going to taste like relative to the words on paper. I don't have that ability with drinks, really, you know, not in any kind of real meaningful way.
Mm.
The way Maggie concepted these drinks, the way she can kind of, you know, assemble these ingredients in her mind and put some of these combinations together, really breathtaking, completely revelatory and awe-inspiring.
Yeah, I think she really, her choices really define the story. And she's the one who came in with the selection of the 5 bottles and explained why you need these particular bottles and why they could make so many different drinks. And she's just a really good and reliable source for making drinks. And I'm glad we got to work with her.
Last one I want to talk about, Frozen Sherry Colada.
Oh.
This is a piña colada with the cream of coconut
and
pineapple. But instead of using rum, it's particularly aged rum, it uses sherry. Fino sherry.
Mm-hmm.
Like nutty, dry, complex, lower alcohol by volume. And it works.
It really worked. I was surprised by that. I developed this and I was, maybe I shouldn't say that. But anyway, it was a pleasant surprise.
Well, sometimes you do have to taste something to know if, like, if your mind, you know, might have been playing tricks on you or if it actually kind of works.
Yes. And as you said, we used sherry in place of rum. And then, I mean, you said everything that was good about it. It was nutty. It was light. It was low ABV. It has canned pineapple juice in it, which I have to say is a very different beast from fresh pineapple juice. So use the canned pineapple juice. And then you use sherry. And then, yes, one thing you can't not use is the cream of coconut.
Coco Lopez.
Yes.
Cream of coconut.
Very different from coconut cream.
Yeah.
Very
why
different.
Is it different?
Because it's full of sugar.
I swear it's almost like the way like marzipan is to almond flavor.
That's a good one.
Like
Chris.
Coco Lopez, it tastes like more like coconut than like a coconut does.
It's just a little shy of tasting like sunscreen, but in a really good way.
Oh,
oh my God, we don't want to read the ingredient list.
No,
let's
we
move
won't.
On.
We
yeah,
won't.
Just
but
know that it's very good.
Magical, transformative stuff.
Yes.
Just take our word for it.
Yeah. And don't skimp on it.
All right, we're bringing this home.
Yes.
Final thoughts.
As someone who doesn't make a lot of cocktails at home, but loves a good cocktail, working on this story for me was a real revelation. It completely changed my understanding of what homemade cocktails could be. And it really got me making cocktails. Now I make a cocktail every week for my husband and I.
Love it.
And this really opened my eyes.
We're going to take a short break. When we're back, Shilpa and I are joined by 2 of our colleagues to taste some of the many non-alcoholic options that are on the market these days, and let you know what we think is actually worth it.
creators of Who Smarted, Starglow Media, comes a brand new podcast called Mysteries About True Histories.
Does that sound serious enough?
Max, we only have 30 seconds for this promo. Just tell them how your mysterious aunt recruited us into a secret order of problem solvers who travel time and have epic adventures.
I don't have to. You just did.
Catch new episodes of Mysteries About True Histories every Thursday on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Dinner SOS. So, we're joined by two folks who haven't showed up on the podcast yet. They show up plenty of other places within our brands. First is Dan Siegel. I have no idea what your title is. Nemesis in chief. Does that work?
I run the development department on the video side.
Do you?
Yes. So that would include reverse engineering, where for several years I spent torturing and blindfolding Chris, literally.
Literally.
To the point where when I was invited on this show, I wasn't sure if it was some sort of trap, to be quite honest. But I am here as a representative of World of Wine, our wine series on the Bon Appetit YouTube channel, starring the one and only Andre Mack, an incredible sommelier. And we recently actually shot a video that goes into this territory. After 28 episodes focusing on alcohol, we decided we would try one focusing on non-alcoholic beverages in the space. So that will be coming soon to the Bon Appetit YouTube channel.
But I also want to introduce Sam Stone. I also have no idea what your title is.
Oh, I'm a staff writer.
Good for you.
Thank you.
That's great.
Thanks.
You should keep doing that because you're doing a great job at it.
Thank you.
Well, part of the reason you both are here, and then of course we're joined by Shilpa. Sorry, Shilpa, I didn't mean to have my eyes kind of skip right over you. But
I was there from the beginning, so it's okay. I didn't need the introduction.
It's great. You are still here. And thinking about the drinks category, right? And this is something that you've reported on, Sam. You know, this is something that we're all aware of. There's all these non-alcoholic beverages out there. But some of them are a functional beverage, right? Some of them have a specific stated purpose, whether it's just to get you high or to soothe your gut bacteria. Everything's trying to do a little extra, it seems.
Yeah, the category is huge. And I think it is stemming from a bunch of different reasons. There's a ton of research out there saying that Gen Z especially is drinking alcohol much less. And then, you know, I've also spoken to a lot of Gen Z creators or Gen Z multi-hyphenates who say that they want those energy drinks, they want that boost of energy. Celsius is one of the most popular beverages on the market with 200 milligrams of caffeine per can.
We looked into this. I think the average cup of coffee was rated at about 90-ish, somewhere around there, 80 to 100 milligrams.
Yeah.
That is wild.
Yeah.
As a kid, we had Jolt, but that felt out there. That was edgy. If you were a Jolt drinker, it was wow. Why don't you just head out to the train tracks and flatten some quarters? You know, you are living on the edge. When we put out a call for questions about drinks, we got a ton that were kind of along the lines of this one from listener David. Most bars with mocktails are just serving juice and soda water for $17. Do you have any suggestions for a non-alcoholic beverage that's not just soda or juice? So, Sam, it's my understanding that for a lot of bars and restaurants, at least in major cities in the U.S., this sort of notion that any credible bar is going to have a certified non-alcoholic drinks program as well as sort of regular cocktails is kind of de rigueur, it seems, at this point.
It's more and more common, for sure. I have definitely spoken to bar managers and bartenders who have said, you know, it's really not a ton of extra labor for us to de-alcoholize our drinks and substitute in, you know, something to kind of finish off the flavor profile. And it just sort of creates a more inclusive space for people who are looking for something else than just a straight up cocktail. So it's spreading across the country. It's everywhere.
So I would like to think a lot of those drinks are more than just juice and soda water for $17. I don't know that I can guarantee it, though, and, you know, results are going to vary. But there certainly is an explosion of drinks that are sort of positioned to be one-for-one replacements of certain drinks, spirits, etc. And we have in front of us on this table a number of these kind of alcohol replacements. The first thing is beer from Athletic Brewing. So let's taste it. Oh, citrusy, spicy, pretty gentle on the hops. little bit of snap to it.
It has a great, it has like the fizziness that beer has. That's definitely there. It has some like nice grassy hay notes.
I think the headline here, though, is that you could drink this and not be sure that it's a non-alcoholic beer.
No, yeah,
definitely.
They have cracked something here where, you know, for years you had these de-alcoholized beers or beers that were made without the full fermentation, whatever it took to produce a non-alcoholic beer. They've figured something else out entirely. And the result, as far as I'm concerned, as someone who just drinks beer, like, that's a beer.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Like, so pleasant.
And it really balances. So many NA beverages don't have the balance of like bitterness, or it's overly sweet, which is like the problem with like sodas and juices. It's just too sweet. It doesn't taste like alcohol. I think the bitterness for Athletic is like really what sets it apart. That really well balanced like little kind of twang at the end.
It feels like something that you could, if you like beer, you could drink this. You could have more than one of these. It's something that you could sit and drink and consume. Like, I couldn't do that with juice or soda or something like that.
Let's move on to our non-alcoholic wine option. This is a red wine from the company Oddbird. Oddbird seems to be alcohol-removed wine. So it is, you know, a vinified wine that has had the alcohol removed.
Generally, there's two types of NA quote-unquote wine. So there's a de-alcoholized, you know, NA wine that has had the alcohol removed. And then there's also, you know, something that somebody has chosen to call wine, which is...
Wine alternatives.
Wine alternative. Yeah, exactly. In my experience, wine alternatives taste not very much like wine. They're just kind of in a wine bottle and sort of like fooling your senses into thinking that you're drinking wine, whereas a de-alcoholized wine is much closer to what actual wine tastes like. Okay, it smells like Manischewitz wine to me a lot.
There's a little bit of that to it. I mean, it does smell, you know, there is like a nice fruit quality to this. This is a blend of, I think, Grenache, Syrah, and Mourvèdre, and also some Carignan in there.
It's giving juice to me.
Same. It really tastes like cranberry juice to
me. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it's juicy. The fact that it doesn't coat your tongue in the same way, it kind of evanesces a little bit more quickly. Mm. It hits you with like sweetness up front, but it is seeming to miss the tannin. It's even missing like a little bit of like the acid a little.
It's definitely missing the acid, but it does, I mean, it dries out my tongue like after.
There is a tannic quality to it, yes.
It's
there
like
is.
Really nice grape juice. It's sort of like,
exactly.
What would the world be like if you were doing like single origin, fascinating varietals of grape juice as opposed to Concord grape?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Would you let your kids drink this?
Ooh. I don't know. I mean, it would be an expensive little habit, I tell you that much.
So in wine tasting, they talk a lot about balance, and that's your alcohol, your acid, and the fruit. And this, to me, feels a little out of balance. It feels very fruit-forward, not a lot of acid, obviously not the alcohol, so it's not really fair to be looking at those things specifically.
Yeah.
But that being said, it tastes good. You know, I would be totally happy to have something like this at a dinner served with the meal. I feel like it could make a good pairing with...
It could go well with food.
Right. So tasting this in context, like, who is this for? What is it for? Why does it exist as a beverage? If you're thinking about being at a meal or wanting to be in that social situation or wanting to have something that's not just, what did you say before, a $17 glass of...
Yeah, fruit juice.
Fruit juice or something like that. This does feel a little elevated. It felt like someone put a little more care into it, and it brings a little more to the table.
Let me ask you guys this. Would you cook with this wine?
No.
I would probably just use...
Because I feel like...
The reason to cook with wine so much has to do with, like, the acidity, like, capturing the acidity as well as the fruit. You don't necessarily want it for the alcohol, but I feel like there's easier ways to get fruit and acid into your food, and that's probably a wine-based vinegar.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't punish this wine for not having alcohol, which is what I think we need to remember.
Like, I think
if it's a wine alternative, it's a non-alcoholic wine, which is what it's saying that it is, I think it does a good job at being that. And if that's what you're looking for, I would recommend this.
Yeah. I think Athletic Brewing threw us off because that was just such a good non-beer beer.
Hard to follow.
Yeah, it was hard to follow. But this did a good job.
We also got a question from listener Michelle, who wrote, "How can I adjust cool-looking cocktail recipes for a mocktail lifestyle? I find just leaving out the spirits makes the drink feel flat. So we have a couple of non-alcoholic spirits next on the docket to see if there's something out there for Michelle to spice up her mocktails. This is Almave. This is a non-alcoholic blue agave spirit, seemingly meant to replace tequila. I'm getting a certain kind of like, it's like a lot of vanilla, a little bit of like cinnamon.
It's super vanilla-y, but it is very tequila-y to me.
No, there is something like kind of tequila-y on the nose. On the palate,
It starts with sweetness on the palate, which I think a lot of NAs are going to do. But then kind of unfurls like some more complex flavors, I think.
And some citrusiness. Like, honestly, this is like very interesting. Like, I could see this working in a cocktail for sure. The warm spice and the vanilla, like, this is an interesting one.
Almave is an interesting product in general because it markets itself as, what is it, an agave drink?
Blue agave spirit, distilled non-alcoholic, yeah.
So basically, this is where tequila comes from, the agave plant, and then there's a very extensive process, but at the core of it, you are cooking agave and then fermenting it, and that's where the alcohol factor comes in. So if you're not doing that fermentation, the question is, what else can you do with agave? And, you know, there's a whole host of agave spirits beyond just tequila, and apparently there's non-alcoholic versions of them. So,
Wow. So
it doesn't necessarily, you know, it looks like tequila in the bottle, but,
yeah. You
know, it's not saying that it is tequila on the bottle.
Mm.
Okay. Hit us with the Liars American Malt.
So this is marketed as a bourbon alternative.
No, this is not fooling anyone.
Does not smell like a bourbon alternative.
Yeah, it does.
But is it interesting in its own right?
It tastes... It's funny that you mentioned vanilla for that because that's also the predominant note I get here. To me, it tastes like somebody mashed up fruitcake in a glass of water and then strained that water and we're drinking it.
It's very watery.
Jesus.
It's extreme.
It's very watery.
Why would they do that?
Extremely light.
It's very light.
Extremely light. Not at all what I would expect for something in this category.
The smell is interesting.
It has a little bit of bite to it, maybe from like cinnamon or something, like a little spice to it. But if that's intended to mimic alcohol, I wouldn't say it's really working. This I can't imagine drinking straight.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't taste good on its own is what I would say. It tastes like half a drink.
I wouldn't buy this one. I'm sorry to this drink, but I would not buy it.
Michelle, I hope that helps. And of course, these are only two things in an absolutely huge category. If you've tried a spirit substitute that you love, write to us and let us know what it is, and we'll pass it along to Michelle. All right, next up, we have a non-alcoholic cocktail from Curious Elixirs. This is Curious Number One, which is meant to be like their version of a pomegranate Negroni Spagliato.
Sam looks very sketchy.
She's just laughing.
Not Negroni. I will say that.
Not a Negroni, but not unpleasant.
Not unpleasant, for sure. I don't know. Sometimes this is like one of those NA situations where you're expecting kind of like a challenging drink, like challenging to your palate, like bitterness, whatever. And what you get is something a little bit more juicy and a little bit more soda-y. So yeah, it's like not unpleasant, but like I wouldn't want this in place of a cocktail probably.
Agree with you.
This one's fascinating to me. They've got a viscosity thing happening here that more closely mimics alcohol and the impression of alcohol kind of coating your palate. There is a real kind of like citrus rind, kind of like bitterness, like a slightly brutal finish, the way like kind of like a Campari, something like really bitter, just kind of like really grips your palate and stays with you. All right, we are moving on. These next few options are functional beverages, the first of which is the Bon Buzz Good Days Only Bittersweet Citron.
So a functional spirit being the opposite of alcohol, which is sort of like the anti-functional spirit.
Well, that feels like how they're being marketed, right?
Yeah, they're not just better for you because there's no alcohol. They're better for you because there's nootropics and there's other stuff that's going to make you feel good. This is one that I wrote about that I liked quite a bit. It has a little bit of caffeine in it, so you get a little bit of buzz, hence the name. And it also has things like 5-HTP, which is supposed to be good for your mood as well. It has a bunch of other nootropics.
I mean, the aroma is very intense, very sharp, very bright on the nose.
It smells very, very good.
Like, this one is another one that is, like, bitter AF to me.
This is super bitter.
God, is it bitter.
Honestly, with the soda, it tastes good. I try to sip without, and then with the soda, it's a completely different beast, I feel like.
It is super bitter, but, like, that is what I like about it. I feel like the bitterness is, like, the base, and then everything else, there's, like, some burning, there's, like, some, like, fruity notes. Chris seems to love it based on his face.
It's just, I don't know, it's a little over-indexed on bitter for me, but it certainly tastes like something. Unlike the wine, there's a very interesting balance of fruit to go with that bitter quality, and I don't know, there's a brightness to it.
This is way better to me than some of the spirit alternatives that we tried before. Like, this is something that I would sip on and really enjoy as, like, a pleasant thing to drink. And that's maybe coming from someone who likes Campari, maybe coming from someone who just tasted, like, 5 sweet fruit juices in a row. Mm-hmm. Like, this is more what I'm looking for out of a beverage that feels complex and nuanced and is bringing more to the table than, like, trying to be something else. It's its own thing.
I agree with you, Dan. I think this is quite enjoyable on its own. With a splash of soda, I would drink this.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it also has the little burn in your mouth, which makes me feel mm-hmm. like it's alcohol.
Like, it makes your whole, like, kind of mouth, like, vibrate a little bit. Like, you know it was there, you know? Okay, so next we've got Three Spirit Nightcap. Calm, woody, mellow.
Yeah, so Nightcap is meant to make you sleepy, so you can have it right before you go to sleep. It is good on its own. It's also very good with, like, a splash of oat milk, actually.
Sam, what have you been up to in your spare time?
That is wild to me.
Yeah.
How did you come about the oat milk combination?
They suggested on the package, yeah.
This I really like. I'm trying to think about the time of day when you would be drinking it.
Yeah.
Which would be right before bed, maybe when you would want, like, a little dessert or something like that. And it has sweetness to it that feels natural, like it's something that feels like honey almost.
It's very honeyed.
With a little bit of a burn. And it's very pleasant.
It's very sweet.
It's very sweet. I have to say, cold, the kind of the honey and chamomile quality to this.
It tastes like dried ginger.
I wish it were a little bit less sweet. I hear you about that ginger, that warmth in the back of your throat.
Yeah.
Do you have a little dessert before you go to bed? Do you have a little ice cream or, like, a little bite of something? Because I kind of do every night of my life now.
Every night?
And I feel like this could fill that space.
Honestly, this is a fascinating one for me. I think I could, like, live with the sweetness just for the sake of, like, how, like, pleasant this balance of ingredients is. And then this, like, warmth, this back of your throat kind of slowly spreading warmth of, like, ginger.
And it's still there about a minute later. I still feel it.
Completely.
Across my entire palate.
Yeah. There's a bunch of peppers in it, but Szechuan pepper as well.
Mm. Yeah, a little tongue numbing.
Mm. Oh, fun.
I don't know that I would drink it as a nightcap, but I almost want it as a lemonade. I want to put a lot of lemon juice in there and make, like, a lemonade with it.
Yeah. This one I might like best of all of them. I just don't think it's over-indexing on bitterness. I love that, like, what they're doing with that Szechuan pepper or ginger kind of component to it, like dried ginger, you know, the way that just, like, has this, like, burn. It's very fascinating, very beguiling. Mm-hmm. You know,
beguiling indeed, Chris.
Well, it's my word, you know, when you just, like, it's hitting, but you don't can't, like, quite pin down why, you know. All right, well, friends, this has been a journey, but mainly what I think is so fascinating is what these drinks are doing is new. You know, like, the ones that aren't trying to necessarily copy something, but are trying to instead offer a new experience, just fascinating in and of themselves, not just because, like, they're a potential replacement for alcohol, but just because they're an interesting thing to drink, you know? Any other thoughts?
There are 1,000 NA beverages in the category. We have only tasted a small curated selection of, if I do say so myself, some of the best ones. But there's tons to try. Please try more and let us know what you think.
We're going to take another break. When we get back, Shilpa and I will answer some more listener questions.
Hi, friends. I'm Cameron Rogers, host of Freckled Foodie and Friends podcast, which is now on Dear Media. Are you wondering what just happened to your life after having a baby or struggling with your mental health during postpartum? That was me just a few months ago. Are you working on healing your relationship with yourself, your body, and or food? Same. We are all on a journey to self-love and acceptance, and I'm right there with you. That's what Freckled Foodie and Friends is all about, reminding you that no matter what, you are not alone. Make sure to tune in for season 5 launching with Dear Media on November 9th and subscribe to listen to new episodes every Wednesday morning.
And we are back with Drinks SOS. Shilpa, it is once again just us in the studio. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Certainly missing all the other drinks and everybody else.
There was a lot going on in here last week, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, we want to get through a bunch of these, and let's do everything we can to keep it succinct.
I like the way you're looking at me.
I know, but I'm really like looking at a mirror and seeing myself.
Okay, we can do this.
We can do this.
Yeah.
First question from listener Bob. Should I be making infused simple syrups? Do they really do anything?
Yes, it depends on what you're using to infuse the syrup with, though.
Give me some examples.
I don't think it's worth infusing a simple syrup with a soft herb, for instance. So like a basil simple syrup, I don't know that I would ever do that. I would rather muddle the soft herb.
Good point.
But if it's something like rosemary, yeah, I would make it.
I mean, my short take on this is yes, hell yes. Like infused simple syrups can level up your cocktail game. They're easy to make yourself. And there's something that keep well for weeks, if not, you know, like a month or so.
Yeah.
I think there's
That's true. There's
a certain way in which you can kind of extract the flavor of something that uses a little bit of heat, which I think isn't quite the same as muddling. But I do hear your point that like there's certain things that's like, how much basil simple syrup do I need in my life? Not much. Whereas what happens when you create like a lemon peel infused simple syrup to me is slightly different from muddling lemon.
Yeah.
So this is like something absolutely should pursue.
Yes. I endorse your message.
Great. Look at us. Next question from listener Zoe. What is an appropriate cocktail to order when at a company happy hour or business trip with my coworkers? I like to drink, and I want to order something that I wouldn't typically get, especially when I'm not the one paying for it, but I don't want to overdo it with something grandiose.
Oh, this is...
So when I solicited some questions on my Instagram, I got so many responses from people who are like, oh, I only ever order classic drinks from a new bar because I want to see how well they stack up against what I think those drinks should be.
Okay, that's a good strategy.
And then I got all the folks who are like, you absolutely have to order off the in-house bar program, you know, the in-house cocktail program to truly understand what that bar is trying to do.
I'm with the latter.
Latter.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, the former is certainly very sensible, but I don't know that I can use that word on myself. Here's the situation. I'm the sort of person, if somebody like just walked up to me like at a party or something, you know, and then they're like, oh, what would you like to drink? I panic and I don't know.
For sure.
So I'd be like, Gimlet is my go-to.
Is it?
But yeah.
That's your back pocket order.
That's my
like,
back
comes
pocket.
Comes out of a holster. Boom. Yep. Gimlet.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
Gimlet
it just
me.
Sounds a little cool enough, but not as basic as like a vodka tonic, I think, you know?
I've had you pegged for more of like vodka Red Bull, but like, that's fine.
Vodka Red Bull. I used to love that in college.
Are you serious?
Yes.
You?
But now it's I've been burned one too many times by vodka Red Bull, so I have PTSD from that combination.
Wow.
Yes. Gimlet is my go-to order when I feel flustered. However, I agree with the latter group that when you go to a bar, experience like their cocktails that they're proud of because it really tells a story of what they're trying to do.
Completely. I think that's the key for Zoe. You know, like see what the bar is all about. Order off their menu. If you don't love it, that's okay. You can always get an old fashioned after.
Yeah, sure.
Or Gimlet.
Or a vodka Red Bull.
Or a vodka Red Bull.
There we go.
It's a different coworker vibe, but that's great. Okay. Question from L.E. Is decaf coffee safe? So, a few weeks ago, I went up to Irving Farm Coffee Roaster in Millerton, New York. I messaged with Jared, who's kind of like the head coffee roaster. I'm sure he has a title that is more encompassing than that. But he's just a wonderful guy who I was delighted to connect with. And I spent an afternoon sort of touring the roaster with my kids. We did a cupping. We talked coffee. And he called in with an answer to the question of, is decaf safe?
Okay, let's hear it from Jared.
Hi, my name's Jared. I've been in coffee for about 10 years now, most of that as a coffee roaster. I've been drinking decaf for a really, really long time. So methylene chloride is a classified carcinogen, technically, but it's only considered toxic past a certain amount per the FDA. There are tons of things in our food system that are this way, things we've eaten for, you know, hundreds of years. Coffee decaffeinated with methylene chloride, when tested, doesn't even really begin to approach the limit set by the FDA. So personally, I mean, I find it safe. That said, if you're someone who is worried about chemicals or carcinogens in your coffee or food, totally get it. There are alternatives. If you want the short answer, it's really just to buy from your local independent specialty coffee shop. Most of the coffees that are decaffeinated with methylene chloride are not going to be meeting the quality spec to be considered specialty coffee. This is going to be more commodity coffees, one you find in your big box grocery stores. Most specialty shops, the majority of them are carrying higher quality decaf coffee. But, you know, my short of it is that I don't think you have much to worry about. But if you are worried, go to your local shop, look for water processed decafs or EA decafs. And that's it. Thanks for having me, y'all.
I love that. What a clear breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
So like basically like industrial scale decaf production is going to use methylene chloride. Anything that's specialty, anything that you're getting that's labeled Swiss water process or water process
mm-hmm.
is not going to use that chemical in the processing. Last question from listener Shannon.
Mm.
For the love of all things sacred, how do I make a dirty, filthy martini without it tasting like jet fuel or poor life choices? And relatedly, a question from listener Adam. What is it about brine, be it pickle, olive, etc., that pairs so well with a vodka or gin and vermouth in a martini?
Mm.
So, okay, I'm not like really a martini drinker.
Me neither.
But there is something very compelling about a brine paired with alcohol, especially a slightly more neutral alcohol.
I think maybe it's like the salt and acid, which
it seasons it.
Exactly. It's just like exactly what it does to food. When we add salt and acid, it makes the food sing. So it's the same thing, I think.
Right. They might be responding to the salt as much as the brightness that it's adding. Vermouth is adding some amount of brightness, but it's also adding some, you know, kind of botanicals,
yes.
maybe some floral aromas, herbal aromas. But like, next time you mix up, you know, a Negroni, next time you mix, I don't know, like an old fashioned, put just like the tiniest pinch of salt, one Malden flake crumbled between your fingers and see what happens.
Yeah. I think a little salt in a drink is a game changer.
Salt and beer, you know, why not?
Yeah.
So Alexis Debochnik has an article on our site that kind of addresses the dirty martini. It's not, you know, this is not exactly my bailiwick, but that could be a really good resource. I also think, you know, the type of vodka matters, right? I think a better brand of vodka is going to be less likely to give you that like jet fuel expression of raw alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And there are nuances in terms of like one vodka to the next, like a little bit more vanilla, a little bit more grainy, earthy. Like there is a continuum, but again, like it's not necessarily my area of specialty knowledge.
No, I think that makes sense. A good vodka will obviously translate into a better martini. I think keeping it very cold, I think helps refine the flavor a bit. And maybe the most interesting or the most helpful takeaway is to taste some of the brine that you're going to add before you add it. And then if it tastes good on its own, then it's going to taste good in your martini.
Yeah.
I would stay away from something that has too many alliums in it, like a lot of garlic or onions in the brine, because it picks up a lot of the sulfur compounds in that brine.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
That's where jet fuel comes in.
If you have a dinner emergency on your hands, write to us at dinnersos@bonappetit.com or leave us a voice message at 212-286-SOS1. That's 212-286-7071. You can find the recipes mentioned on today's episode on the Epicurious app brought to you by Condé Nast. Just search Epicurious in the App Store and download today. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating and review on your podcast app of choice. And hit that follow button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening to Dinner SOS. I'm your host, Chris Morocco. My co-hosts this week are Shilpa Iskokovich, Dan Siegel, and Sam Stone. Our producer is Michelle O'Brien. Peyton Hayes is our associate producer. Cameron Foos is our assistant producer. Jake Loomis is our studio engineer. Amar Lal mixed this episode. Chris Bannon is Condé Nast's head of global audio. Next week, we're re-airing a favorite episode from the archives. Nico and Natalie are Bon Appetit superfans, but Natalie's recently developed a dairy allergy that's really thrown a wrench in their dinner plans.
And so I called in to see if there's some way that we can take some of our best and most favorite and most trusted Bon Appetit recipes and make them dairy-free.
You're listening to Spirits Talk. My name's Dan Siegel, and I'm here along with Chris Morocco today. Chris, thanks for having me.
The only thing I like more than jazz is a good spirit.
Hello, parents, homeschoolers, and teachers. Trusty Narrator here from the Who Smarted podcast. Our 15-minute episodes are perfect for car rides, bedtime, break time, class time, or any time. We make learning science and history fun and funny for 7 to 11-year-olds with new episodes every week. Look for Who Smarted on any podcast platform or at whosmarted.com. And teachers get a free subscription to our ad-free version by clicking educators at whosmarted.com.
From PRX.